everyone. Welcome to Garden Fork Radio. You're here with Rick and Eric.
Good morning, Eric. How are you?
I am good. I'm very cold, but thank you.
Oh, I tell you, hadn't it been a remarkable few days?
It was really warm yesterday, and then this morning it was like high winds and cold air.
We were out in the yard, She Who Must Be Obeyed and I, cleaning it up, getting it ready for spring. First real cleanup we've done. And I borrowed a pole trimmer from a neighbor, and it extends up about 20 feet, and it has a hook with a line you pull on it to kind of prune smaller limbs, but then it has a saw on the end to saw larger limbs. And we had our river birch, all river birches, shed limbs during the year, and they droop down, and there's a beautiful tree and wonderful bark. Mm-hmm. Off and everything and nice colors, but it's kind of a pain. But anyway, so I was pruning that up, getting all that stuff up the trunks a good ways from the ground, and I realized that I must be getting close to being an old man. Oh, you know, you realize how, you know, that's just not a movement that you use, sawing,
the overhead sawing movement.
Yeah, that is just not a movement you use. And I don't know of a, there's probably a machine at the gym that replicates that, but I haven't seen it.
Yeah, you get the same feeling when you're trying to sheetrock a ceiling, and it's just two guys and it's heavy sheetrock.
Oh, I bet.
Because building code, I think, is 5/8 sheetrock. That's mm-hmm. heavy.
Yeah.
So then you go rent the sheetrock lifter.
And the scissors lift that puts it up against the side, the ceiling.
Yeah, it's I've never seen a scissors one. It's just kind of a simple pulley system with like a T-bar kind of pole that you put the sheetrock on this thing, and then you just crank the wheel, and it goes, and it shoves it up against the ceiling, and you screw it in. Well worth the rental there,
I tell you. Well, hadn't it been a remarkable month? There's been so much going on. You know, I was just looking at the calendar, kind of looking back at what we could talk about. You know, there was Friday the 13th. Not superstitious, but it was there.
I flew on Friday the 13th.
Did you?
Yeah.
And you made it.
Yeah.
Then we had.
And I landed in LaGuardia, and I made it.
Oh, my. Then we had Pi Day, which is also Einstein's birthday, on the 14th. And then the Ides of March on the 15th. You know, beware the Ides of March.
Yeah.
Julius Caesar, it's not such a good day. We dove right into the 17th and St. Patrick's Day. We all partied. Did you go down to the parade?
No, I avoid that.
Yeah, I avoid big gatherings too. But the really big news is on the 20th, it's finally coming, the vernal equinox. And this time we get a triple header. It's the vernal equinox, a solar eclipse, and a supermoon all on the same day for free.
Now, the supermoon is where the moon just looks incredibly large in the sky, correct?
It's about 15% larger. It's the moon's orbit is not completely circular. It's a little elliptical. And this is its closest approach to the Earth. And so it's just a little bit larger. Some people can say they can see it. Others, not so much. I actually studied when I was trying to become a physicist. Did you know I actually started off to be a physicist?
That doesn't make sense to me.
I struggled. I could do the math, but it never spoke to me. And it was the most humbling thing in my life to be in a class with guys and a couple of girls who the math actually spoke to them. We'd work these problems, and they'd say, "Now, but look here, you take this and you turn this equation upside down, you move it over here, and what you got?" And I said, "Well, you got another equation," but they could actually see, it spoke.
Yes.
And
I can do that to a point with math, actually.
Yeah, can you? Well, it's an amazing talent I do not have. But anyway, I studied with a physicist down in South Texas. His name was Don Olson. His still around, by the way, still teaching down at is now Texas State University. And he's in the news every now and then. He and his wife and another physicist, his wife is in the English department, and they do these historical dissections of astronomical events.
Mm-hmm.
and determine, either through literature or through history, and back, you know, turn the clocks back and everything and see what they were actually seeing when they were describing this, these kind of things. And he's the one that discovered, like, the Battle of Tarawa in World War II out in the Pacific. Terrible disaster. And essentially, the landing craft ran aground on the reefs way out in the water away from shore. Because no one understood the tides in that area very well, and they had a very super low tide, and their landing crafts just couldn't get over the top of them. And it took them years. Yeah, it took him years to figure that out. But also, you know, stuff with Van Gogh and literary references and all kinds of stuff. There's actually, I'll put a link in the show notes. I send you a couple of articles about him in the Smithsonian and whatnot. But it's kind of interesting to go back and actually say, well, you know, what they were seeing. You know, they might not be describing it in a physical way, physics way, but what they were saying actually happened. It's just they didn't understand what they were seeing. So, pretty cool.
Wow.
So, anyway,
I do, you know, you wanted to talk about that, and my interesting thing of the day is dishwashers.
Well, I did want to get one thing out, though. Or two things. One, the eclipse is only going to work if you're on the Faroe Islands out in the North Atlantic, which is where the total eclipse will be.
Yeah, I won't be there.
There will be a camera if you get up at 4:30 Eastern time on the 20th, and we'll put a link there. You can actually see the eclipse go by, and it'll be a partial eclipse in Northern Europe and Northern Africa. And then... the actual vernal equinox, the first day of spring, begins at 6:45 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on the 20th. So just about sundown. That's when we will enter spring, and we'll put this horrible, nasty, no-good winter behind us.
Wow. And I just tapped my sugar maples this weekend.
I haven't seen the video yet, but I saw it went up, but I haven't watched it yet.
Oh, are you there, Rick?
Yes. I saw that the video went up, but I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, sorry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At least the phone isn't ringing during our podcast. So.
Oh, yeah. Somebody dinged us about that. Ha ha. <Yeah.
laughs> Well, yeah, I got it's going to be a short maple season. I did just post a video. I mean, there's kind of a glut of sugar maple videos on the Garden Fork YouTube channel and the site. And I was like, you know, part of Garden Fork is kind of a experiential. And I'm like, okay, well, this is what I did this weekend. So we just, you know, I call it Maple Sugar Tapping 2015.
Right.
We did a couple little changes. And, you know, we're out in the yard. With the puppies love the snow. And they love to bury their tennis ball in the snow. And then they dig it back up.
So. You know, I was watching some of your videos, kind of catching up from the ones you did last, the end of last month and then the first part of this month. And the dogs out jumping off those snow-covered banks into the icy water and playing and stuff. Those are hardy dogs you have.
Yeah, they love. You can't keep them out of the water. So.
Yeah, Thomas Jefferson actually recommended a cold water foot bath every morning when you got up.
Huh.
I'm not going to do that, but apparently the dogs seems to work for them.
So I had a couple interesting articles that I had sent to Rick, and one of them kind of ties along with what we've said a couple of times on Garden Fork, and neither one of us have children, but there's a lot of allergies coming along. You know, there's more allergies now than there used to be, and one of my thinkings on it, and actually an emergency room doctor friend of mine backed me up on this, and that kids don't get dirty enough, and that allergy risk may be tied to how well you wash your dishes.
Oh, really?
So it's from the New York Times, and I will summarize it, but basically they said that, well, I'll just read the first paragraph. A new study suggests that parents who wash their dishes by hand rather than a dishwashing machine may unwittingly lower the likelihood that their children will develop allergies.
And so, in other words, if you do a sloppy job of dishwashing, your kids are going to be better off.
Yeah. The new study, published in the journal Pediatrics, looked at whether a number of behaviors that expose children to bacteria early in life might protect them from developing allergies later on. The idea, known as the hygiene hypothesis, is that children raised in a particularly sanitized environment are less likely to develop an immune tolerance to trivial threats.
And that makes sense. I mean, kind of in a, you know, just common sense way.
Yeah. I'd be interested to see what people have, have people experienced this. I can't remember when we were really young, if we had a dishwasher or not. I know in our second house we did, and I have a ton of allergies. So,
yeah, we did not have a dishwasher, and I know I was always digging and playing in the dirt and creating little forts and rivers and mud, and I was in the dirt all the time, and I still have a lot of allergies, so I don't know. I mean, we had a dog. We had dogs, lots of dogs. So I don't know.
It says here, the findings demonstrated only an association, not a cause and effect. So it's not clear whether these behaviors directly led to fewer allergies. But they also touch on the fact that children that ate fermented foods or foods bought directly from a local farm had a lower potential for allergies as well.
Okay. Well, I'll go along with that.
Yeah.
Nothing like a good pickle or a good sauerkraut or something like that.
Yeah, when I was a kid, I eat yogurt now, but not then. So
yeah, I loved sour pickles when I was a kid.
That was from the New York Times Well blog, and we will have a link in the show notes. If you're listening on iTunes, if you touch on the while the show is playing, there's a Garden Fork Radio logo. I think if you just tap that, the info section or the description of that podcast comes up, and there'll be links in there. I'm still trying to figure out how to do hyperlinked text. Right now, I'm just kind of dropping in the long link. iTunes just recently made those information, the show descriptions, HTML compliant. So I'm still working on all that. If anyone has any suggestions, let me know. If you're wondering how to support Garden Fork, one way is to shop on Amazon. If you go to the gardenfork.tv homepage, on the right-hand side, there'll be a couple of links to shop at Amazon. And if you use those links, it tells Amazon that you came from Garden Fork. Also, there is a link in our show notes of this episode right now. Or you can just go to gardenfork.tv/Amazon. That's gardenfork.tv/Amazon. That'll take you directly to Amazon. It'll tell them that you came from Garden Fork. And we really appreciate that. It really does help. All right. Thank you.
Are you getting stuff in the ground? Are you getting the ground ready for planting?
No, there's a foot and a half of snow in my yard.
Oh, dear. Have you started seeds yet?
I'm going to start some seeds in New York. The furnace room, it's a steam boiler in the basement in New York, is quite warm. So it's a perfect seed starting environment. And I have one of our grow lights down there all ready to go.
Oh, that's great.
I'll start some lettuce. I have to dig out the our latest edition of the Cold Frame Hoop House, which is Hoop House video number 3. Weathered the winter storms really well. So this kind of third generation design has worked very well. And I put it over some salad greens that I had started in the fall. And I'm curious to see whether those have started to grow again, or do I need to replant that area?
Well, you know, I am learning my lesson. I've got tomatoes started, and I've got rootstock tomatoes started. I'm going to try grafting again this year.
All right.
Which has failed, 2 years in a row now?
You can also buy grafted plants. They're not cheap, but you can buy them.
They're not cheap, and generally by now they're all gone or spoken for. But I'm going to see if I can do that. But, you know, I'm learning my lesson and trying to be more disciplined about succession planting, particularly for greens. Just plant a few lettuces and then wait a week, plant a few more lettuces. In the same way with cabbages and stuff like that, they're not all ripe at the same time.
Yeah, that's the key. I'm intrigued by, I have a used copy of the Square Foot Gardening book, and I'm going to revisit that method. And my friend Brian, here in Brooklyn is obsessed with lasagna gardening. So, in other words, right. the layering of materials in your bed. So he wants me to drive him to the big park nearby here to go get a bunch of leaf material, you know, brown leaf material for his beds. So we'll see about that.
Okay, well, that'll work out. Lasagna gardening, the Bartholomew book. No, that's Square Foot Gardening, Bartholomew book. Really popular, and you can do a lot of gardening very intensively if you stay on top of it in a very small space.
Yeah, I have 6 raised beds, and I think we could raise a lot more food in them than what I do. So,
I think this is the year I'm going to resurrect my aquaponics program. Except I'm going to do it here on my own property this time in the backyard on a smaller scale. And so I'll see if I can get some videos and stuff going. Unfortunately, I went out the other day, and it was a nice warm day, and I glanced at the beehives, and I have 2 of them in the backyard. And nothing was going on. And I said, well, that looks suspicious. And so I got out the hive tool, started cracking open bodies, and I just found a heartbreaking pile of bees at the bottom of the box and 10 pounds of honey in the box. So they didn't starve to death, and I have no idea why. So I don't know. I'm out of the bee business right now.
There's a really good bee blog called Honey Bee Suite, and suite is like hotel suite, suite.com, Honey Bee Suite, all one word, .com. The lady's name is Rusty, and she is a great writer, I think, and a clearly a bee expert. And she has written about new varroa mite treatments, and she's been doing this post-mortem thing on dead hives, where I think she's done it 3 times now, where people send her pictures and a very detailed description of what was going on in the hive, how they treated the hive, and then they try and she and the readers try and figure out why the bees died. So I think a lot, in at least several of the cases, it was too high of what's called a mite load. In other words, the varroa mite population in the beehive was just too high in the fall, and it killed off the hive.
Well, I am. It's too late for me to really go back and take a lot of pictures and go through that. I did examine the bees, a lot of them carefully, didn't find any mites on them, dead mites, but they may have fallen off and dropped through, you know, the bottom, because I use a screen bottom board year round. So I don't know, but I did. I went the safe route this year, and I dumped all the bees. I dumped all the honey, even the honey that was left. I went ahead and dumped it, threw away all the frames, all the boxes, everything associated with those hives. I'm sanitizing the ground around there, and I will start this year with fresh frames, fresh hives, and just start from new and see what happens, because there might be something in there, and I'm certainly going to treat the ground around the there are certain miticides and nematodes and whatnot you can put down there to take care of both varroa mites and small hive beetles to a certain extent. Which, there, by the way, I did not see any, but boy, I had wax moths in one of my hives. That's always heartbreaking.
Interesting. There's actually about 4 people in Connecticut that are starting to keep bees because of Garden Fork, and I've been emailing with them just with local bee questions. It was kind of neat. It was just kind of neat to hear from people. So you can email us, by the way. It's radio@gardenfork.tv. radio@gardenfork.tv. Oh, and I got to talk about Wi-Fi everywhere.
Wi-Fi everywhere.
Well, you know, Rick, I know you do this let me just tell the story and then you can reflect on it.
Okay.
But in the NPR All Tech Considered section of their site, they report on a Wall Street Journal reporter, Ryan Knutson, who spent a month relying on Wi-Fi networks for his mobile data and voice needs. So a lot of cell phones can use a Wi-Fi connection instead of a cellular connection to make calls. You can also just use Skype. And he was quite successful at it. I mean, he does live in an urban area, but it really got me to thinking that, you know, unless you're way out in the woods, you might not need a cellular data plan, a cellular voice plan on a mobile phone.
It's possible. Now, we have them. I think I've talked a couple of times that our service is Ting, mm-hmm. which is a Sprint reseller. And through Ting, you actually buy your own phones, your devices, and you bring them over. You can buy them used on Glyde, G-L-Y-D-E. And Ting actually just started allowing iPhone 6s, but you have to obviously buy a new one. But I've been, you know, I'm in the Apple ecosphere, so I've been buying iPhones, but you know, you can control very closely what uses data and what uses voice in the system. And you know, here at the house, because you know we're on Wi-Fi and it's got pretty good coverage all over the property, and then you know wherever I shop, I just you know, if I feel like I the need to check email while I'm out, I just stop by a Starbucks or a Panera's or something and do that. And I can Skype out of there. You know, there are any number of ways to use the system and not use up minutes. But, you know, we cut our telephone bill from maybe a couple of hundred, maybe 225 a month down to less than 60 a month every month. That's with two smartphones.
So with that system, if you are out on the highway far away from Wi-Fi, you could use the cellular portion of your phone using the Ting/Sprint network?
Right. Yeah, we when we did our road trip down to Florida in February, we just turned on all the services and let them use the cellular network. And that way Waze, W-A-Z-E, which is my favorite mapping app, mainly because Wazers, as they call themselves, report police radar traps along the way. And so as you're riding along, you'll pop up and say, radar trap reported here, and you know, police reported here. And you kind of know to watch those areas. And then so it works out pretty good, but it uses the cell towers to communicate all this then. And so our bill goes up a little bit when we're on the road. But the rest of the time, we just shut it down and almost never use the cell towers for anything.
Cool. You know, I was also thinking about this. I know this is in New York City. Time Warner Cable and Optimum are the two cable providers, and they also provide us with our internet connection. They have hotspots throughout the city, and I think basically what they're using is they're using their distribution boxes, which are in on every block. They also put a Wi-Fi router in there as well.
Right.
And they say, oh, we have millions of hotspots around the country or around the city or whatever. So basically, whatever they have a distribution box, which is one of those boxes where all your individual cable lines come out of, there's a little Wi-Fi there. And if you have Time Warner or Optimum, you just use their little app to connect your smartphone to their Wi-Fi network. So you could essentially, you know, drop your cellular service and use an older generation smartphone and not have to pay that. You would just be paying your regular cable bill. You know, and you have free access to these Wi-Fi hotspots. So it just got me thinking.
Yeah, it's you know, it's there are ways. Of course, you know, now that we're retired, we have to economize.
Yep.
That's what old people do. But you know, so we've been, you know, we cut the cable many years ago and just rely on Verizon here for our internet, and then have routers and repeaters all over the house and in the yard and stuff. And then we have really worked hard at cutting down the telephone bill. And, you know, it just takes a little bit of planning. You know, everyone knows I'm a podcast fanatic. And the secret is to download your podcast onto your phone before you leave the house every morning. You know, if you want to, you know, have a playlist of certain podcasts like I do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you download all the a day's worth of listening and make sure that you don't need to touch the internet or the cellular system during the day to listen.
There you go. I was trying that yesterday. I was trying to sync my phone podcast with the podcast on the computer, and iTunes is just not the most intuitive thing in the world sometimes.
It is not. You know, I am learning a lot. You can go to iBooks in their little apps and download free iOS 8 manuals.
Uh-huh.
And they actually explain a lot that you don't find online or any place else. And I'm finally going to get those and seeing a lot of details that I had missed. But the podcast app and iTunes are still a bit of a mystery to me. But I have tried all the different podcast apps out there, Downcast and even the ones you pay for. And they all seem to have similar blind sides, let's say. So, you know, they don't work the way I'd like for them to work. Mm-hmm. My favorite way would be to have them all download onto the computer. And then I pick and choose, you know, I read the little description of the podcast each morning of the new ones that have downloaded and say yes to this one, no to that one, yes to this one, no to that one, yes to this one, no to that one. And the ones I said yes to, then shuffle off to the I can rack them manually and stack them so that they're in a playlist order of some sort, and then shoot those to the phone and just be done with it. Because you can use a mouse and a big computer a lot faster than you can with a little tiny screen and trying to get that stuff figured out.
Yeah. All right, cool. Well, I think that's enough of a drive time radio for our friends.
Well, today will be a day of consolidating my brush pile out front and all those limbs and stuff I've cut down, getting them cut down smaller so garbage people will pick them up. It makes me think every year this time that I wished I had a small little gasoline-powered wood chipper so I could just chip up the small stuff and create more compost. But I'm keeping an eye on my neighbors. Several of them are cleaning out wonderful dry leafy material from their beds and under the trees and stuff, because they've got to have a perfect yard.
Yeah.
And they're bringing all that stuff out and they're sacking it up, and they put them in clear bags out by the curb, and I've been eyeballing those and picking them up and evaluating them, and I'm bringing home mulch by the bag full, literally 40-gallon bag full.
Free.
And I lay them down in a particular strip in my yard, run over them with the lawnmower, my mulching lawnmower, two or three times, then put the bag on the lawnmower, pick them up, you know, bag them, and put them in a bed. And so I'm getting ready for spring and the planting season, and I am just thrilled.
Cool. I haven't got there yet. The ground's still frozen, but I'm a little north of you, so.
Yeah, I feel sorry for you.
It's also cooler up here in the summer, so.
Yeah, that's true. Come August, I'll be wishing I was up there with you.
All right, everyone. Thank you for listening again. If you're listening on iTunes, could you write us a review? That really helps in our ratings on the iTunes pages. We're actually kind of like in the middle of the pack of popular shows on iTunes. Food, I think, is the category we're in. We didn't really talk about food today, but there's new videos. There's a whole bunch of making seed starting paper pots that are new on our YouTube channel, the DIY YouTube channel, and on the Garden Fork site. We got some new cooking videos coming out, and if you want to catch up on my maple syrup escapades, we're going to start boiling maple syrup next weekend. Well, this coming weekend, probably listening to the show right now. All right.
You know, I was on iTunes podcast just a while ago, and they have these little things that they group them together. They can say podcast essentials or podcast starters or something. Mm-hmm. And when you select food, Garden Fork is in there. And when you select DIY, Garden Fork is in there under Garden Fork under iTunes essentials.
Oh, neat. I've never met the people that run the podcasting section, but I'm told that they like us. So
I hope so. I hope so.
Yeah, good for them. All right, everyone. Thank you for listening. Check back next week. Always want to hear from you. It's radio@gardenfork.tv is our email address. All right. See ya.
All right. Talk to you later, my friend. Bye-bye.
Thanks again for listening. Appreciate you taking the time to download Garden Fork and spend some time with us. Again, you can email us. It's radio@gardenfork.tv. If you're shopping on Amazon and you'd like to help out Garden Fork, you can use our link to it. It should be in the show notes here. There's always a link on our page, the front page of our site. And you can use gardenfork.tv/Amazon. That's gardenfork.tv/Amazon. It'll take you to Amazon, and I'll tell them that you sent us. We sent you. All right? Thank you. Garden Fork's theme music is used under license from uniquetracks.com.